You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, episode number 424. This too shall pass. Anonymous.
Broadcasting from the back alley in Hollywood, it's the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, where we show you how to survive and thrive as an indie filmmaker in the jungles of the film biz. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome to another episode of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films. From predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them, the odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's filmbizbook.com. Today's show is also sponsored by the Film Distribution Blueprint. If you want to avoid being taken advantage of by predatory film distributors, this is the course for you. If you want to check it out, head over to indiefilmhustle.com/letmein. Now, guys, before we get started, I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah and Happy Kwanzaa and Happy Holidays in general. It has been a crazy year, but hopefully 2021 will be a much better year. Now, guys, today on the show, we have the first of an ongoing series I'm going to be doing over the next few months on film production during COVID-19. And I've been getting called and emailed and texted and messaged by so many different filmmakers asking my help, if there's a way, any resources on how to shoot during COVID in a safe manner. And that goes for very low budget indie projects that are non-union all the way to full-blown union projects that are still in the indie space, maybe $1 million, $2 million and below, that are dealing with an entirely other set of problems dealing with unions and all the other stuff that goes along with those bigger productions. So today on the show, we have Austin Williams. Now, Austin was shooting his new feature, Redstone, in the middle of the COVID pandemic before anybody in our business knew what the hell was going on. The film had a respectable $500,000 budget, and it stars Neil McKenna and Michael Cutlets. In our conversation, we discussed the methods he used to keep everyone safe on set, how he dealt with SAG, and the costs associated with dealing with COVID safety measures. If you are interested in shooting during this crazy time, this is an episode for you. So enjoy my conversation with Austin Williams. I'd like to welcome to the show Austin Williams. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm as good as we can be in this crazy upside down world we live in today, sir.
I hear that. It's upside down is an understatement.
We are in the upside down, the Stranger Things. We are in the there's no question about it. We are in an alternate universe.
that's a perfect analogy right there. We are in the upside down.
I feel like there's dandruff flying in the air at all times for some reason. It's just like
That's it, man.
And
that's
every it doesn't seem like every moment of every day that goes by, something else amps things up to another level. It's not enough that we have come with a once in a generation pandemic, but everything else that's piled on upon us is, I can't even. Period. Yeah, I can't even right now.
That's right. nothing, you know, nothing, it's nothing is a surprise anymore. You know, it's just like, oh, okay, well, add that to the list. All right.
I do remember that. I do remember earlier in the year, and I might be mistaken and it might be wrong, but I heard that in some documents that were released by the government that there was basically proof that aliens exist. And I remember that was said somewhere in passing, but with the craziness that is happening right now, literally, if an alien showed up, we'd be like, eh.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just like, oh, okay. Well,
of course. Of course the aliens have arrived.
Why would they not, you know, at this point?
Hey, but look, as we're talking, we still got a little bit left in this year, so we better be quiet because God knows what else could happen.
Who knows, man? It's let's fast forward to the end and hopefully things change come 2021.
So, all right. So, how did you get into the business, my friend?
I've slowly gotten into the business over the course of my entire life. I've since I'd say second grade, I've wanted to be in the entertainment industry in some capacity. It just took me a while to figure out what exactly that was and how I was going to get there. I took media tech classes in high school. I went to film school afterwards, but the whole time I was trying to facilitate, operate a videography business with my best friend who I've known for many years, and we've done this together the whole time, essentially. You know, me and him ran a little wedding videography business here, and we went to school. We got our skill sets a little bit more involved. He kind of went the creative camera route. I went more the AD and producer route. Once I established, okay, I know how to do this the best out of anything, and my camera work is just, well, shit. So I'm gonna stick to what I know and what I do best. And I've been freelancing now for 12 years. I've been a freelance assistant director and producer, or production manager, supervisor. I've just been in the production department for 12 years now, I'd say. So.
And where do you live in the country?
I'm in Dallas, Texas.
Okay, all right. That's not a small market by any stretch of the imagination. No, it's a fairly large city.
Yes, it's a large commercial market here. That is about what I'd say. I'd say about 90% of the crew and the people working here, they're working commercials. You know, that's how they're making their living. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's me personally, I do work the commercial stuff quite often, and that does get the bills paid. But I know for me, you know, I got into this to make feature films, and you know, hopefully someday make good ones.
Exactly. Now, we're having you on the show because you were one of the few filmmakers to actually film a project in the middle of COVID before anybody knew what the hell was going on.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
You were in the shit.
We were in the shit.
So you're in the shit, and everybody around you was basically Chicken Little, SAG, didn't know what was going on. They didn't know what questions to ask. You know, you basically just moved forward, trying to set up guidelines that would protect yourselves and your crew and get everybody in and out safe while still doing this. And this was wasn't a small budget in the indie space. I mean, do you mind me asking what the budget was?
No, it was $500,000. So it wasn't relatively small, but obviously not big Hollywood money either. So it was doable, but within reason.
Right, exactly. So it wasn't like a $10,000 or $15,000 film. I mean, it's just, as in the world of independent film, $500,000 is a respectable number, say the least. Yeah. And what was the name of your film, and what's the genre of it?
The film is called Red Stone, and it's a Southern crime thriller.
Very cool. And do you have any bankable stars in it, or any stars?
Our lead star is played by Neil McDonough, or our lead role, I should say. Neil McDonough. A lot of people may know him immediately from his work on Yellowstone.
Yes, Neil has been he's one of those faces that's been everywhere. He's just been he's a character actor who has worked in so many huge, huge movies. And he generally plays the villain. And he plays extremely, extremely well. He's just
– Yes, he does.
He has one of those faces that – and I don't mean that in a bad way because I love Neil. But he has he has a face. You're like, yeah, bad guy.
But he does play the villain perfectly. But I have to say – that is one of the nicest guys and one of the most professional guys I've ever gotten the pleasure of working with. And I cannot say enough nice things about him, you know, truly and honestly. So he was a pleasure.
Now, what was the filmmaking process like shooting during COVID? When did you shoot this? What was the month?
So, you know, at the time it was, you know, at least in Texas, I can't really speak for all the states, but we shot at the beginning of June. And at that time, restaurants and businesses were only opening up at a 25% capacity. And it was a different time, especially it's different every month in production. It's very different now than it was just a few months ago. It's crazy how fast we're adapting to this, you know.
And it's adapting, and yet things are just changing so rapidly. I think everybody is got whiplash, COVID whiplash, especially in the production space, because we're one minute, error, we're good. Oh, next minute, no, we're not. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, we got to do this now. Oh, well, now it's not 6 feet, it's 10 feet. Oh, it's airborne. No, it's not airborne. Like it's so you're constantly trying to set up a process that doesn't take a day, generally speaking. It takes weeks to shoot a film, and weeks before prior to prep it. I can only imagine. And when you went in, you were in June. So June was, you were going into the height of the pandemic. Like it was like people, it was insane. That if I remember correctly, I mean, the whole year has been insane, but during that time, it's been pretty insane. So when you walked in, all right, so you're going to start shooting in June. Do you guys have masks? What was the procedures that you used during the whole process? And by the way, did anyone get sick while you shot?
Actually, we are very thankful to say that no one got sick while we were shooting. Everyone went home, and the people that did get tested no one experienced any symptoms, but the people that did get tested afterwards, everyone came back negative. Okay. But our preparation for it was one of our producers put together these we call them COVID kits, which was just a bag, a backpack, so to speak, with a mask, some hand sanitizer, some sanitizing wipes that we gave out to all the crew members. We had our production assistants. They were constantly wiping things down. Our crafty setup was completely different from what the norm would be. It was not a just walk up and grab. Catering was not buffet style. It was place your order, you know, a day before, and you would get it, you know, for the next day's breakfast or lunch, kind of like, you know, you would on a reality show or in the post world or something like that. So, you know, it wasn't anything that was impossible to accommodate for, but it did bring its fair share of challenges, especially whenever you have, you know, certain institutions asking you for a breakdown of every single scene, of as far as where the actors are going to be within their interactions with each other. And are they going to be 6 feet apart? And they even asked us, whenever they're driving in the car, how far apart are they? I'm like, how do you answer that? I don't know. I don't know of a car that I could get 6 feet apart in.
I mean, a tank. I don't know. Like, you know, like a old school Hummer, maybe.
Yeah.
Like
maybe a limo. You a know, limo would be easy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and this is the problem I feel with. Well, I mean, this is a common theme of the show is the institutionalized structure of the dogma that we have in the film industry, that it takes forever for us to move as an industry and to change and to adapt. Hence why Disney Plus just opened up a decade after Netflix launched their online service. Like, you know, it's all of a sudden now everybody has a streaming, but it took a decade before they said, you know what, this might be the future. And I'd argue if it wasn't for the pandemic, we would have never sped up this whole digital premiere video on demand like they did with Mulan and other projects as well, because we were forced to. So when you're dealing with these old school, let's call them institutions, not unions, institutions, that they are looking at things like it's 1996 or hell, 2019.
Yeah. I mean, it's the way business is done sometimes, archaic is the word I kind of use. It's just, it makes you scratch your head and wonder when was the last time this form or this set of questions was updated? Because I'm just not – this has no relevance to what's going on in today's world, or that, you know, you need to get back certain correspondence to them or so on and so forth. It's just one hoop to jump through after another.
Right. So like they're asking for, you know, how many film loaders are you going to have on set? Do you have a change tent?
Yeah.
Can you fax me over something? It drives me nuts anytime anyone goes, can you fax this? I'm like, no, it's 2020. There's no faxing.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know where a fax machine is.
I'm not going to go to the post office and pay $10 a page to fax you something. Stop it.
Yeah. Exactly.
And a lot of these systems are in place, and that definitely is a hindrance in the insanely quick changing world that we live in today. And that's constantly shifting, constantly moving. And that's why the studios have taken as long as they have to even adjust. You were out there kind of on the front lines, just going for it. So how was it working with, you know, some of these institutions, some of these unions? Like, you know, I know SAG at the time when you were shooting literally had no idea what the hell was going on. I've interviewed other filmmakers who have worked with SAG more recently, and they have like a list of things you have to do, and there's protocols and things like that. But back then it was the wild, wild west. And when I say back then, we're talking about 2.5-3 months ago.
Exactly.
So what was it like?
It wasn't that long ago.
So, you know, working with someone like SAG, what was it like then? And then working with some of the unions, because at $500,000 budget, you, especially in a city like Dallas or in and around that kind of city, you're going to have to deal with unions. You're going to have to deal with, I'm assuming, IATSE and those kind of unions. Am I correct in that?
No. With Texas being right to work, honestly, the only union we did any work with was SAG. We talked about it amongst, you know, our producers and director, and we were like, yeah, you know, if any other unions were involved, this may have been a lot more challenging.
Then basically SAG was the only union you really had to deal with.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was that process like?
It was a lot of phone calls with a lot of SAG people. I think we had one call that there were three of us in the room, you know, three of us producers, and then I think about 15 SAG reps on a call, and they hit us with a million and one questions that we had already answered in previous, you know, emails and correspondence with them. It's like they try to trick you into answering the wrong way. It's kind of, it's weird. Yeah. They ask you certain questions and they phrase it in such a way that it makes you think this guy's definitely got a law degree. This is crazy. But they didn't give us a red light. Now, they did wait until the very last minute to give us our green light approval. We were supposed to start shooting at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning. We got our green light from SAG at 5:30 p.m. the Friday before. So to say that we were sweating if this thing is going to, you know, have to be postponed is that it doesn't even compare how nervous we were.
To add with the stress of shooting during COVID, you got to deal with that kind of crap. That is
exactly
it's insane. And again, it's because of the bureaucracy and all of that red tape and all of these old archaic systems that are in place that kind of slow the process down dramatically, and then throw COVID on top of it, and they're just like really lose their mind. All right. So how many people, by the way, did you shoot with on set? How many crew members?
We had an average crew. We had a few day players here and there, but the average crew size was 30 people a day, plus four or five actors on set every day. We did have a couple of bigger days that I think we pushed 45, but nothing ever bigger than that.
That's a fairly large set for a COVID set. Knowing what we know now, that is a fairly large production. And did you keep everybody what's the process of trying to wrangle 35 different human beings who arguably are already a little bit outside the norm because they're in the film industry? They're not cubicle kind of people. So they're not conformist as a by nature because they're in our industry. So how did you wrangle them? How did you organize them? How did you keep them safe and other people safe? Because it's so difficult now. Just walking around the streets, people are like, I'm not wearing my mask. I'm like, well, like, how do you deal with that?
You know, we didn't want to forced anyone to do anything that they felt uncomfortable with. And we made that clear from the start. We told them how we were going to be approaching shooting the whole film, which was if we were indoors, there was no additional crew. If you were, you know, essential crew only if we were inside. Outside, obviously, we were a little bit more laxed on it. We still told people to keep their distance as much as possible. That made sense. And on their off days, we told them, you know, guys, use discretion. You know, don't if because one person goes out and gets sick and comes back, you know, this whole thing is tanked. So please, you know, use your best discretion when going out over the weekends. We couldn't hold. We didn't want to ask anyone stay in your hotel room for the next 48 hours. We'll see you Monday. You know, we didn't want to do that. But we did have one crew member that I'm so thankful that they were honest. She called me. It was we only had 3 days left, but we had a couple off days before those last 3 days. And she called and said, was with someone that was with someone else that tested positive. What should I do? And I said, well, thank you for letting me know. I'm sorry to have to do this, but we can't take the chance. So she didn't join us for the rest of the shoot. But you know, it was just certain, you just have to constantly adapt to whatever's happening, you know, to keep everyone as safe as you can.
Yeah. So, I mean, looking back, do you feel that this was a bit of a risky approach?
Yes.
Just straight up. Yes. It was.
Yeah.
You know, because if you look at what Tyler Perry is doing over in Georgia, I mean, he's literally quarantining bubbles mm-hmm. of crew yeah. members and actors for 2 weeks or 3 weeks at a time that they live on the production. They do not go out. You can't go out because of that. Like if you let someone out and they just go to a bar, they go to Taco Bell, they go wherever and they can pick something up. And if that's the yeah. case, it just breaks. I mean, it's insane that we're having these kinds of conversations, but this is this is the world we live in. So you would not advise this approach in today's world, knowing what we know today, which again, all the way back in June was completely different than the information we have now.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I think the best approach, it just takes a lot of budget money, but the best approach is the Tyler Perry and the NBA approach to it, you know, the bubble system to where you are all contained and only sharing, you know, each other's germs throughout the whole, you know, duration of the shoot. I think, you know, that's about as safe as you could possibly be. But, you know, there are many precautions you can take to, you know, cover yourselves, cover your ass, really the best you can. And we were thankful that it worked out for us. And I've got a few friends that have been shooting, you know, since really things opened back up, and they haven't stopped, and they haven't had any bad experiences. You know, obviously I'm starting to hear sets of people that do have COVID and they're going to work, and it's a giant dice roll is what it is.
It's scary, man, because it's the same problem that the entire country and the entire world is balancing. It's like, you know, do we all go broke or do we all live? And you know, but it's like we have to balance the economy and lives, and we can't just shut everything down. Though oddly, you know, obviously enough, if we did shut everything down, we would probably be better health-wise, but our entire world would shut down. So there's this balance, and I think with a production it's the exact same thing. Like how far do you go? Like do you stop shooting because you're literally taking a roll of the dice every time you go on set, because you have no idea unless you're in a Tyler Perry scenario, you have no idea where the other person has been the night before or 5 minutes prior to getting to you. It's extreme. And then of course, film sets are generally not the most wide open spaces. Generally, the crew are really on top of each other. I mean, just the camera department, you've got the DP, camera op, first AC, and you might even have a second AC hanging around this and a dolly grip. And you know, that's four or five people that are just jammed in next to each other this entire time. So it's filmmaking does not work well with COVID. It is not a process that works well together.
It's you bring up that a good point of, you know, certain departments remaining very close knit with each other, and in that regard, we took that into place when facilitating the crew's, you know, hotel rooms, their accommodations and stuff like that. So, you know, the pod and the zone system, I think, that's in place now, that's something that we, you know, we were thinking about at the time. So, you know, we told the crew, if you're gripping electric, you know, try to stay amongst yourselves as best, you know, the best you can, art department, so on and so forth. We tried to share the set in different zones the best we could, you know, obviously until it gets time to shoot, then you got to bring camera in, you got to bring your actors in.
Well, I mean, generally speaking, a film set is very much like a high school cafeteria. I mean, we all pretty much sit our own tables, you know, you know, the grip department stays with the grip department, camera stays with camera, art department stays with sound state. Well, sound is just the one dude generally with the boom guy sitting in a corner who never gets up and never does anything other than just his job and doesn't talk to anybody because sound people are weird. I'm joking. Anyone listening, I'm joking. Obviously, the weird ones are the stunt guys. But
I think all sound guys, you know they're weird, but they're accepting of it. You know,
they're very. I've worked with the best sound guys ever, and I've never met a stunt person ever in my life who's not tweaked in one way, shape, or form. They're all crazy in the most wonderful ways possible, but they are nuts. Because as a director, I'm like, hey, I need you to do 3 jumps over here because I can do 4 jumps and fall off the building. Can I do that? They always want to take it to the next level.
One step further.
Always 1 or 2 steps further, a little bit farther than you feel comfortable, which is always a good sign of a good stunt guy, I guess, or stunt person.
They show up like, how are we going to beat me up today?
Right. Like, oh, we're going to throw you a punch. No, just 1 punch. You need 6 punches. And then I can throw myself. Like, it's fascinating. Yeah. It's fascinating. Yeah. But all departments, generally are, you know, they do kind of stay together. And I like the whole pod system of like, you know, keeping each department. But the problem with the pod system in that scenario is it's like, if the camera department goes down, pretty much the production goes down. If our department goes down, pretty much the art department goes down. So production will suffer, but human life won't be, I guess, basically in this process. Now, as a and you didn't direct this, right?
No, Derek Presley was our director.
All right. So how did Derek deal with directing in a COVID set? That has to be insane.
Honestly, you know, that's one of the reasons I love working with Derek. He is one of the calmest, easiest directors to work with. You know, he's very understanding and very compromising to things that either aren't, he's very just compromising and understanding of limitations whenever they happen. But he handled, as far as COVID is concerned, he handled it very well. I don't think he ever took his mask off. He may have even slept with it on.
smart man. But how do you direct actors? I mean, is he constantly directing from a video village or 6 feet apart? Because, I mean, as a director, you want to sometimes get close to the actor, maybe give them a note that nobody else wants to hear and things like that. So did you see anything or how he dealt with that?
You know, Derek's not so much a video village type director. Even with our guidelines in place, he remained his distance whenever directing. He's definitely a face-to-face, but in this instance it was a little bit different. He had to stay distance, and I think whenever there were certain times where he wanted to give some notes that he didn't want anyone to hear, he would just make sure that they were done in private before we really got into things. So Derek's definitely he's a director that knows what he wants, and you know, I have mad respect for him.
Now, were there any love scenes or any action sequences in your film?
Action sequences, yes. Love scenes, no.
Okay, so no kissing at all.
No
hugs. No hugs.
We did have hugs. Yeah, we did have hugs. That was just one thing that, you know, you got to roll the dice on.
So everyone listening, don't do what Austin is saying to do. Don't roll the dice constantly.
No. But you know, this was before COVID testing was required, and we quite simply just didn't have the money to afford COVID testing, and we weren't about to rightfully ask the crew to have themselves tested and pay for it.
It was just.
You know, we did ask. We took temperature checks daily. We did do that. We had a COVID officer even before it was required. We had one available to us. We had the city that we shot in was very accommodating of us if we had any types of issues related to that. So we were constantly asking our talent, you know, how are they feeling, especially the ones that were getting closer. If we had a excuse me, we had a scene that was taking place in a car, or the hugging scene, for instance, you know, we made sure that they weren't feeling any sort of symptoms or anything of that nature. So I guess roll the dice was the wrong verb to use there.
No, I just want to make sure everyone's like, well, you know, I heard on Alex's podcast, you just got to roll the dice when you're shooting with COVID. I'm like, no. It's a different time. It was months ago.
It was a dice roll, you know,
shooting.
It was a dice roll shooting, period. We didn't know if we were going to get shut down because the state shut down again, or if we were going to get shut down because somebody got sick. You know, we were walking into the unknown.
And how did you do the action sequences? I mean, when these action sequences, are they fist fights? Are they more firefights?
Firefights. Yeah.
Okay. So that's distance. So that's distanced action, correct, as opposed to full blown fights.
Yeah. We only had a couple of punches here and there, but those were actually pretty easy to cheat. And so the distance thing, we didn't have to break those rules there. So.
And how much more time did it take to shoot? And what was the cost addition? Because it had to be some sort of cost addition, because you were shooting during this time, because everything slows down. I mean, everything has to slow down. You're probably shaving a couple hours a day, which is massive in the scope of a schedule. How did you do it?
We shot it in 18 days. We didn't have any, and by day 18, we had everything shot that we needed to. And 18 days was the intended schedule from the start. We didn't add on additional days for, you know, COVID purposes. And even though we dealt with it every day, we still got in there and got it done and averaged, you know, we had most of our days were about 7 pages a day. We did have one monster 12-page day, but yeah, we got everything we needed, and it didn't really kill us too much in the time aspect on the day.
Oh yeah. And I'm assuming there was probably less takes than usual to move forward.
Well, thankfully, with Neil, he is a one take guy. He gets it done, and you know, we move on. That's one of the many great things about working with Neil.
Yes, I've when you work with a seasoned actor, it just makes things so much better. It's like working with a professional in any aspect of the business or on set. If you work with professionals, everything just moves a little bit quicker.
So, yes.
Note to everyone listening: sometimes the best money you spend is by spending a little bit more to get the high-end experience pro, as opposed to always looking for the cheapest option, because the cheapest option will end up being more expensive for you. Would you agree?
That's right. Yes. I use the expression, you pay bananas, you get monkeys.
I might steal that one. I like that one. You pay bananas, you're going to get monkeys. Now, what was the biggest challenge you had to deal with shooting during COVID?
Honestly, this is going to sound pretty small on the, you know, grand scope of things, but lunch and meals, because we didn't have a whole lot of caterers that were willing to go out and work just yet and cater a film production. So we went to restaurants in town, which was fine. That town was more than accommodating to us. But, you know, I've always noticed in every set I've ever worked on, every single production, if the crew members don't complain about anything, they will always complain about the food. It's like I don't think I've yet to go through one show where I don't hear it, even if it's something middle, like, oh man, like we had spaghetti. I wish we had steaks and potatoes today. Like, it's just one of those things. Well, whenever you're dealing with box lunches and, you know, going to pick them up and bringing them to them, if something's wrong, you can imagine the wave of complaints and so on.
I said no onions. Damn it.
Exactly. Yeah, the salad is wilted. What is going on?
What kind of Mickey Mouse operation is this, Austin? Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
You're treating us like savages, wilted lettuce.
I'm telling you. It's not like, you know, it wasn't Subway sandwiches or anything like this. We weren't cheaping out on what we were getting them. It was just, you know, it seemed to be that nothing could ever be right. You know, it was challenging.
And for everyone listening now, I don't think this is going to be a problem because you can't really buy these anymore. But definitely whenever you're on a production, if at all possible, do not order spinning wheels of death. Are you familiar with the term spinning wheels of death?
I'm not.
Those are pizzas.
I'm familiar with what they do, and I steer away from them because I know what they do to me personally. If I have that you know, in the middle of a work day, I'm done the rest of the day.
Cheese and the bread and the grease slow you down dramatically. And, and generally it's, you know, I've seen, especially the grips and the grip and electric and art department, the ones they just look at it just like, oh, goodness, that's the kind of production I'm on. I'm eating pizza for lunch. If it's a snack or something like that, maybe later towards the end of the day. But even then, I try to stay away from it. But that's one mistake that a lot of independent filmmakers make is they'll buy that pizza thinking that, oh, look, for $10, I can feed a bunch. No.
Yeah, no, I learned a long time ago to not do pizza, and really just try to not overweigh people with heavy meals at lunchtime. You know, if you feed them nothing but carbs and, you know, just heavy
lasagna, heavy,
you know, yeah, exactly. You know,
carb up.
Yeah. Just carb will load them up and see how they do.
Now, so your film is, from what I understand, it's almost done in post-production and you're almost done with it. What is your plan to actually sell it now and get it out into the marketplace in this ridiculously ever-changing marketplace that we have no idea what's working or what's not working? And when I say we, I'm talking about the entire industry because nobody understands what's happening.
Yeah, we are in the final stages of post where we've got everything done visual effects wise. The music is done. Coloring is done. The last piece of the puzzle is the sound mix. And we have been speaking with a few distributors that have expressed some interest to us. We haven't made any concrete deals with anyone yet. But honestly, I kind of assumed, or I don't want to say assumed, I wondered to myself, whenever COVID was just starting and the entertainment industry shut down, just like everything else did, I wondered to myself, I wonder if this is going to create a giant influx or a giant need for new content. I wonder. And it's to piggyback off of that, it's been a very bizarre case of distributors coming to us wanting to talk, you know, discussions about the film before seeing anything of it. And not just specifically with Red Stone, with the previous film that I did with this same group of core guys. And then another film I did following before that, it's been unique in that aspect. We haven't had to cold call distributors as much as we may have would have before, you know, before all of this.
When we get off the recording, sir, I will discuss with you distributors and tell me who's talking to you so I can I can guide you in the way, because as you know, it's one of my favorite topics.
Oh yeah. And for the sake of this, you know, we haven't made any deals with anybody yet, so I don't want to mention any names.
Of course not. We never mention names. We never mention names publicly. Right. But you guys all know who you are. Well, man, listen, I wish you the best of luck. Thank you for sharing your journeys in the COVID world with us. I'm fascinated because, I haven't shot anything during COVID, nor will I be shooting anything this year for sure. And I don't even know if I'll be shooting. I might be shooting something late next year. Who knows? But right now it's I'm lucky I don't have a burning story inside of me that needs to absolutely get out right now. But you guys rolled the dice.
We did. We rolled the dice and you know, everything so far to now, we won that dice spin. So hopefully the next time we just keep pulling them in, you know.
Yeah, and there's a lot more precautions now, and there's also a lot more regulations and guidelines and things that have to happen. I know SAG has got a big list of things you can do. I'm assuming you did not have everyone sign a waiver saying that they can't sue you if they get COVID, or did you?
The actors, we can't legally do that. But the crew, we didn't make them sign a waiver either. We were going to, if someone got sick, COVID or no COVID, we were going to fully, you know, take care of their medical expenses. If they got sick or injured while they were working for us, then we were going to take care of them no matter what. So
and by the way, did you have? I have to believe you had insurance, right?
Oh yeah.
So how did you get insurance on a on a production during COVID? Like, what was that process like? Because I'm assuming the insurance companies were like, yeah, we'll cover everything except COVID.
Yeah. Honestly, the process wasn't much more detailed or much more aggressive than it would have been pre-COVID. It wasn't – obviously, they weren't going to cover any, you know, COVID cases. But yeah, it was the same as it normally
so
is.
So they covered everything except COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Of course they did.
That's but what we were prepared for that.
Fair enough. And I'm going to ask you a few questions I ask all my guests. What advice would you give a filmmaker trying to break into the business today?
Trying to break into the business, always remember that good luck is nothing more than hard work meeting opportunity.
Yes, and preparation.
And preparation. Yes. Prep is king.
Now, what is the lesson that took you the longest to learn, whether in the film business or in life?
Patience.
That's mine too. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
patience. It's you gotta always humble yourself and be patient with things, because if you try to be too linear with it and move too fast, you're going to derail yourself one way or another.
And what is the biggest piece of advice you can give anyone trying to shoot during COVID?
Wear a mask for sure. And just, you know, think about the number of people you're going to have. Think about the logistics of it and make sure that you're not just going into it, you know, extreme guerrilla style. You know, make sure that you're, even if you're trying to do it ultra, you know, under the radar, you know, take care of the people that are working with you, you know, just use common sense. But sometimes that's not so common. So just really think about it.
And three of your favorite films of all time, sir.
Oh, these always surprise people. But Ace Ventura.
Nice.
Day for Night, the French film. Mm-hmm. And Armageddon. That's my guilty pleasure.
Wow. Armageddon. I mean, in the... Yeah. The pantheon of not pantheon, but is pantheon the word? But in the scope of Michael Bay's career, Armageddon is definitely in the top five.
Absolutely.
And as like The Rock, I still say is his best, without question. Then Bad Boys 1 and 2 probably followed up behind those, but Armageddon is just so much fun.
Oh, it is. It's like the best popcorn movie ever made.
It's so much fun. And I heard the other day a bit of the audio commentary from the Criterion Collection, because Armageddon's in the Criterion Collection.
Really?
Yeah, it is. The Rock and Armageddon are both part of the Criterion Collection for people who disrespect Mr. Bay. There you go. But they actually had Ben Affleck talking. He goes, hey, Ben goes, yeah, I asked Michael while I was on set, hey, wouldn't it be easier to teach astronauts to drill as opposed to teaching drillers how to be an astronaut? And Michael said, shut the hell up. So I ended that conversation very quickly. It's no logic in that movie.
Right. But and it's just as fast in the movie itself. You know, that's exactly how it happens, you know.
That's right. The drillers learned how to be astronauts in a montage of about 7 minutes, and everybody was okay. Let's go. Right.
Ready to go to space.
Let's go land on a moving target.
Yep.
It's amazing. Piece of cake. And then where can people find you and more information about your movie?
So you can follow the movie at Redstone, the movie on Instagram, myself, Austin Williams, just my name, Austin Williams, no numbers or underscores, anything like that. And I'm on Facebook. My company is Alpha Whiskey Entertainment, and that's Alpha spelled A-L-F-A. No matter how many times I say that, people will always write down A-L-P-H.
Of course they will.
But yeah, Alpha Whiskey Entertainment is my personal production company, but everywhere else you can find me, Austin Williams.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your COVID journey with us. I truly, truly appreciate it, my friend. Stay safe out there.
Well, thank you so much, Alex. Have a good one.
I want to thank Austin for coming on the show and sharing his experience shooting during COVID. I know everybody out there is just itching to start shooting again, and better or worse, guys, we are in this for the long haul. I don't see this changing anytime in the next year. It might start getting better, but I think we should strap in because I think production will change from this moment on. As Tom Cruise has so beautifully put it on the set of the new Mission Impossible film, if you guys have not heard that yet, it is definitely something you should hear in regards to how he goes off on his some crew members who are not paying attention during COVID. And I'll put a link of that in the show notes as well, which is at indiefilmhustle.com/424. Thank you so much for listening, guys. If you are going to be shooting out there, stay safe. It's a movie, and it's not worth someone dying for. Thank you so much for listening, guys. Have a great holiday. You'll get another episode this week. You're getting a bonus episode on Christmas Day, and I'll be releasing another episode on Saturday in part of my series on COVID production. Thank you again so much for listening, guys. As always, keep that hustle going. Keep that dream alive. Stay safe out there. Merry Christmas. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast at IndieFilmHustle.com. That's IndieFilmHustle.com.